Terry, I'm an alcoholic. I got sober July 20th, 2009. This is my home group. My sponsor's here. A bunch of guys I sponsor are here. And it's a miracle, man. My dad was here 4 years ago.
That was quick.
You know, when I celebrated a year sober, and he can probably attest to it more than anybody, including myself, how miraculous it is, you know. Man, you guys gave me life I didn't know was possible. I didn't know I wanted it, and, you know, I met Ryan my first night in AA, and I remember thinking, like, man, he's a swell guy. You know, he's all right, that Ryan. He's a little dorky, but I can deal with that. And our backgrounds are entirely different, you know. Not much the same, and except for the way we drink and what happens to us when we drink. And I've always looked up to him. You know, I got to live with him and watch him behind the scenes when you guys weren't looking, and see him work AA in a way that, you know, I can only try to do, you know. And over the last few months, I've seen him do stuff that I didn't have the chance to do because of alcohol, you know. And, you know, if I could trade, if I woke up tomorrow in his shoes, I'd be okay with it. And there's not many people that I say that about. But he made the trip all the way from Orlando. It's a long drive. And without further ado, I'll let him get to it.
My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 24th, 2002. My home group is College Park Triangle Group. We meet Thursday nights in Orlando, so I'm here instead tonight. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. And Gene, congratulations. And Dane, you did a great job. I love to hear anybody in AA start talking about God and not worry about it. You know, it's an amazing thing. And, you know, I was thinking about Terry on the way here. And, you know, I don't know about anybody else can do it better, but I can attest it's a miracle. You know, I met him his first night in AA, and you can always tell when you think he's not going to make it. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to be the one that stays sober, and, you know, 5 years later, he's sticking around. And we've done all kinds of stuff together. Like he said, we lived together and stayed up late at night talking and doing that kind of stuff. And he was an usher in my wedding. You know, like, just a part of life. You know, it's like, it goes beyond sitting in a meeting a night a week for an hour. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous to me has always been more than that. And I'm just grateful that was what was stressed to me when I was new. And not stressed by their words, but by their actions. You know, the people in front of us, were, you know, they were concerned with more than just sitting down for an hour and hearing. You know, it was about how I'm going to act in the rest of my life and how I'm going to carry these principles out beyond, you know, these rooms and these walls. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for Terry. I was hoping to, you know, I mean, not crying till the end, you know, but got me going a little bit already, so it's primed, so it's probably going to happen any minute, which is weird for me because I've never done that in a meeting before. So if it happens, we'll see, but, you know, I'm just grateful to be here tonight. You know, I loved alcohol. You know, I loved the way it tasted. I loved what it did for me. You know, when I was drinking, there was never a night that I didn't actually love it. You know, the last night I drank, it had this effect on me that I loved. You know, the problem was is everything else. You know what I mean? My whole rest of my life was terrible. And I started young. I had my first drink. I was a weird, nerdy kid. I cried all the time because I don't know why. You know what I mean? You cry all the time. It just always happens. So there's all kinds of reasons. But my parents got divorced when I was a kid. I wore a helmet for a year because I had a severe head injury when I was like 3. I have a big scar on the side of my head. I put stickers on the helmet to look cool. It didn't work. I was at the petting zoo when I was like 4, and a goat put his hooves on my shoulder and was eating the stickers off my helmet. I just started crying, you know, because that's my only defense. And my mother just like, you know, football kicked the goat, right? Just made a noise and ran off. And You know what I mean? So that's what I'm working with, you know? And he's the only Jewish kid in the Catholic school. You know, just neurotic. And it's just like, and the fact is when it comes down to it, I have this extreme self-centeredness. And I've had it as long as I can remember. I don't really remember a day where I worried about you before me, you know, in any of my life growing up. And so that's, you know, I'm like 6 or 7 or 8 years old. I can't remember exactly, but it was young, and I was in Miami, and I was at a party with all my family, and they were all in town this weekend, and actually the uncle was there, and my favorite cousin, Michael, I just really looked up to him. He laid on the ground, and he put the tap of a keg in his mouth, and I'd never drinking. I didn't really know much about it. I knew I wasn't supposed to do it, and that was exciting, you know, and I also thought you lay on the ground to drink out of a keg. I didn't know that there was another way, and so he's doing it, and so he stands up, and everyone, I don't know, like, it seemed like, in recollection, it seems like everyone, like, cheered for him, you know, when he stood up. I doubt that's what happened, you know, but it just seemed like, wow, that's it, you know what I mean? That's the ticket. That's how I'm going to get out of this, and I was right. I was absolutely right. I lay down on the ground, I put the tap in my mouth, and I started drinking, and it tasted bad at the time. It was beer. I was, you know, into orange juice and Hawaiian punch and stuff, you know what I mean? It's a different taste, I'll tell you that much, and But I remember Michael laid on the ground for a while doing it, and so I just tried to match him. And I stood up, and I just remember that feeling, you know, like what a good, you know, chug of alcohol will do for an alcoholic. And it's not about taste or anything like that. What it is it just hits me in my belly, and everything's done. You know, I've arrived. The search is over. You know, I am there. And I knew I wasn't any cooler or older. I knew I couldn't break dance or skateboard like my cousin Michael. Just didn't care. You know, I was completely content for the first time in my life. And I kept doing that night because it's a phenomenon of craving. I couldn't have told you that at the time. I was 8. I couldn't say any of those words. But I had it, you know, and so I just kept drinking. And I woke up the next day. Everything was normal. I didn't get in any trouble. I just kind of got up and was like, I can't wait to do that again. That was amazing. And so I did it whenever I could. It was tough growing up at, you know, 9, you get booze on a regular basis. But I did what I could. You know, I'd steal from my neighbor's liquor cabinets. We would get people to buy us booze at the corner store. You know, just all that. If somebody's garage was open and there was a fridge in it, you better believe we were looking. You know, and if there wasn't anything in there, we didn't go to the house. I hated it. You know what I mean? Those people were stupid. And we did whatever we could to get drunk. And you know, high school was high school. I lived with my folks. I didn't really have any choice. I was always afraid of getting in trouble, but I loved to not do what I was supposed to do. And so I essentially got like straight C's through high school to get, you know what I mean, just enough to not be grounded every day. You know, like just enough, not anything further. You know, I didn't want to put in any extra effort to that. And then I would drink as much as I could. And by the time I was a senior in high school, So I took the SATs once, right, like some high school students do. I took them once. I did exactly where I wanted to be, right? And my dad was like, yeah, you should take it again. And I remember on a Saturday morning I showed up and I was hungover, and I know what fixes a hangover. And I just looked around at people and I just turned around and left, you know? Like, and then my dad asked me how I did, and I said I didn't do very well on that one, you know, because I didn't want to tell him I did better because I knew I'd get caught for that one. So I was like, bad day, I was sick, you know, that kind of stuff. I went and got loaded with my friends that day, you know? And so that's alcoholism to me. I got the bare minimum to get by, and I still got into the only college I applied to. I applied there because it was rated the number one party school in the nation in 1999. I went there my junior in high school with my best friend because his older sister was in a sorority, and I got drunk with me and my best friend and about 90 college girls. It was amazing. You know, it was like, I couldn't wait to go to college. I thought that was what college was going to look like the entire time. It's not, you know, but I thought so. And so I couldn't wait. And at the very least, I was like, I have the in up there, you know, like Shannon, she'll get me in and make sure that and drinking in the sorority house every day. And again, didn't happen. But I applied. I got in. I got in like October of my senior year of high school. And I celebrated. And by that, I mean I became a daily drunk. And wasn't what I intended, but I got that letter. It was some night before school, and the next morning I woke up, and I got my mom's vodka, and I poured it into a water bottle, and I took it to school with me, and I was getting loaded in first period, whatever class I was taking at that time. I don't remember. And then the next day I did the same thing, and I just kept doing it, and just kept going. And I would think, you know, once I get to college, I'll be like I'll grow up. I'll be like a man, you know, and do what men do when we grow up and get good grades and jobs and all that stuff that I was completely incapable of doing any of it. But I really believed I would make it to that point. And I got to college, and the same thing. I had less supervision, so that's great for a drunk. And I just basically, first year I did the minimum to get by. I was in a fraternity. Fraternities, they like allegedly haze people, right? I don't want to sell anybody out, but we, you know, they would make us do some weird stuff. But for me, I got lucky because they knew I was a drunk, and so they would just make me drink. And so they would just start handing me beers and like, chug this until I throw up, which is my plan for that evening anyways. You know what I mean? It's just like, I love fraternities, you know? And I got through the first year. I had straight C's. The second year, I wanted to turn over a new leaf. I wanted to do better in school. I wanted to be a man and grow up and all that kind of stuff. And I'm incapable. The next year, I get my grades are dropping. Then the year after that, I would sign up for classes. And at the time, the internet was there, but it wasn't like I never used it. You know what I mean? Like for like some student stuff in the computer lab and stuff like that. But like there wasn't wireless, and like the Ethernet cable was really big. And I was too lazy to get one. And so you know what I mean? By the time you could call up on the phone, and that's how you would register for class. And so I found out in the first week of college, if you don't show up for class, they drop you automatically. So if you wake up right before that class roll gets taken and you drop it and then re-add it, you're on the roster for the next class, right? So I don't have to go the first week of school. It's like summer just extended a week. It's amazing, you know. And the problem with that is I never went, you know, like through the whole time. I took golf class that year with my best friend. You literally go to the driving range, you know, like it wasn't tough. I do that. I pay for it now, you know, like it was easy. And I showed up on a win or whatever day it was to get some pee from my buddy because I had to take a drug test and I'd been smoking some pot, right? And this poor guy's like never done drugs, you know what I mean? At that time, he'd hardly drank. He's like getting good grades and doing everything you're supposed to do. And I'm like, hey, Chad, I need some pee, you know what I mean? Like, hook me up. I gotta get a dishwasher job and they're gonna drug test. And he's just like, but the problem was is that day I showed up, it was the midterm. It's golf, right? And so it's like a test. I have to go in and take it. I'm scared. I got like a 98, right? It's golf. It's not hard. And I failed the class. I failed all my classes because I didn't show up for anything after that. That was like the mistaken go get some pee day was the only day I was in class that semester. Next semester, I failed all my classes. On my 21st birthday, I remember thinking I'm going to go back to Tampa in the morning and spend some time with my folks for my birthday, but I'm going to turn 21 at midnight. I'm going to go out and drink a little bit. The last thing I remember at the beginning of the night was some girls handing me a shot, and I said, I have to drink it. You know, it's free and it's there. There's no reason not to. And so I drank that. And then the next thing I remember is like 5 hours later, I'm at the Village Inn eating an all-world double cheeseburger, right, crying, like nonstop. And my roommates are like, why are you crying? I have no idea. I just got there. You know, so it's like, that's hard to explain to people, you know, like it just, you know, it was weird. I go back into the blackout. I kind of come back out. It's like, now it's like 6 or 7 in the morning and I'm on my couch and I put my cell phone next to my head so my parents can call me in 2 hours, wake me up so I can start driving back to Tampa. And I wake up the next night at about 8. Everything in my house is off because I hadn't paid any of the bills in a while. So they do that. They turn off my power and my house phone and my cable. That didn't matter, but you know what I mean? My parents were trying to call me. They couldn't get in touch with me. They thought I had died the night before, like a DUI or something, because they knew a little bit about what I was doing. And I came back to Tampa. My parents were done, and they were kind of like, look, here's a little bit of money. Go get a security deposit on a house and go do whatever you want to do. You pay your rent. You pay your bills. So I went about getting a job. I lived right here on Davis Island, this little house on Columbia. It was like a quad, and so there's four drunks living, you know what I mean, next to each other. And two drunks. The other two were pretty normal. I'll tell you about that in a second. But the drunk I lived next to had his life pretty much together. He was like a 6 foot. He was actually one of my good friends from high school. He was 6 foot. He's like pasty white with long, long dreadlocks that were, it just didn't look right on him. He worked two jobs so that he could drink and smoke as much pot as he wanted, and he would do it. And I was stealing beer from him. I know this kid for like 10 years at this point. I'm just stealing, you know what I mean, from as much as I can. And I get a job at the pizza joint right there. I'm delivering pizzas. I wake up at 3 every day. I start work at 4. I get a 12-pack of beer at the 7-Eleven, and I put it on ice, and I start drinking. And I go to that job at 4 o'clock, and somewhere along the way, I had gotten a small TV. Right? Like, not cool. It was like this thick. It was a black-and-white picture. Plugged into my cigarette adapter. And so I was drinking and driving, delivering pizzas in y'all's neighborhoods and watching TV at the same time. I had like rabbit ears of the TV hanging out the passenger side window, you know. And At 10 or 11, they pay me in cash, and I would park my car, and I would get drunk. And at 3 o'clock, I'd run to the 7-Eleven. 3 a.m., I'd run to the 7-Eleven because they're about to stop selling beer, and I'd get as much as I could get. And it's like the type of run where, you know, like your feet are real heavy, and so is your head, you know, so your body's not working right. And it's like, why is the floor coming at me? And then you roll, you know, and then you jump back up because the 7-Eleven's about to close. You got to get there. And, you know, I'd get as much beer as I can afford, and then the next morning at 7 a.m., I'm waiting on that curb outside that 7-Eleven, waiting for them to start selling beer again. Sundays were the worst, you know, here in Tampa. I don't remember what it was, 11 or noon. It was awful. And but 7 a.m., I'm watching people go to work knowing I'll never be like them. I'll never have a shot at it. You know, it's not in the cards for a drunk like me, and I knew it right then. And, you know, that's not to mention all the terrible stuff I was doing. If you let me in your house, I would steal from you. I would break into my mom's house, and I'd crawl across her floor in the middle of the night, and I would steal money out of her purse so I could keep getting drunk. You know, my mom's a single mom, and she's working hard and doing all that stuff, and, you know, trying just doing whatever I can to get by. I'm driving my car all over the place in blackouts. I'm waking up, and I can't open the driver's side door, and you worry about that in the morning, because that's a morning problem, right? And so you go the passenger side, and then you find out you hit a parked car and just kept going, you know. And that's the type of life I lead when I'm drinking. I don't have any kind of, you know, big moment at the end of my drinking. Every day was the same. You know, every once in a while something terrible would happen. Like I'd wake up in my front yard with my two normal neighbors just staring at me, you know, and it's weird and hard to explain with a quick answer. So he's kind of run inside, and you know, it's just nothing was pretty about it. Right, and one night my parents asked me what was wrong with me, and I just told them. I'd wanted to tell them for about a month. I said, I can't stop drinking, and I don't know what's wrong with me. I had a drinking problem at that point, because I knew if you separate me from alcohol, my problem would be solved, but I needed that help. And they sent me to a rehab. I went to this rehab, and they would take us in that bus to meetings, and they would bring in meetings on the weekend. And I heard this guy share his story. He had about 6 years sober, and his name was Brian. I've never seen him since, you know. I actually told my story about a year ago, and somebody said, I know that guy, Brian, he's still sober, which is awesome, you know, but I've never seen him since. But he saved my life that night. He carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous into that room, and I related to somebody. And it's just like Terry said, none of our story was the same, you know what I mean, but our relationship with alcohol was the exact same. And he talked about it in a way that I never heard. And I've seen doctors and therapists and shrinks my entire life, ever since my parents got divorced when I was 3 years old. When I was 16, they took me to get hypnotized every Wednesday because I was a weird kid. You know what I mean? Like, that's the answer, is hypnotizing people. And I'm too self-centered for that, right? I'm just brain churning to, like, relax and get hypnotized. So I'm just thinking, what does a hypnotized person look like? You know, I'm going to act that way. You know, and so they start, you know what I mean? So those are the people I'm seeing. And this guy tells his story, and I relate, and I told him the truth. You know, I told him, I drink just like you. And I don't know what's wrong with me. I think I'm an alcoholic. And that's part of what changed for me. I got out of there, and my roommate from that place, he said he could drink wine safely, and he OD'd one night, and he died. And I went to a noon meeting the next morning, and there was a... You God worked perfectly for a guy like me. I'm like 21 years old. I'm like 220 pounds, and it's all in my face and my belly, you know, from the beer. So it's just, and I, so I know I'm not bringing anything to the relationship table, but there's a young, attractive girl in the meeting, and she's been sober about 6 months, and she comes up to me afterwards because I shared about my friend dying, and she said, you know, my name's Emery. She come to my meeting on Thursday, and that's all I heard. At that point, she kept talking, and I was just like, she loves me. I can't wait. You know what I mean? This is amazing. I love AA, you know, And so I'd follow her anywhere. She said, my meeting's in Tucson, Arizona. I'm like, well, let's go get tickets. You know, I'm ready. And she brought me here. She brought me to the one we were at the other church. And there's the one thing I can remember really, and now, I couldn't tell you this at the time, was there a singleness of purpose there. Everybody there was concerned with me because I was new. And it was all about how I'm going to carry the message and what am I going to do. I put my number on lists a lot of times, but it's always better when I get somebody's number and follow up with them, because I had a lot of those lists. I never called one number. They're all in the trunk of my car. But these people here, they would call me and they'd ask me what I was doing, and they'd invite me to the meeting, and they'd invite me to their house, and they would, you know, take me and they showed me what AA was. And I'm so grateful for that, because those people, it was like that guy Brian and these people, absolutely saved my life. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I thought a bottom would be sufficient. You know, I hit bottom, I'll stop. You know, a bottom's like the start. You know, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous, I hit bottom and then I got to get to work, because the fact is a bottom will keep me sober maybe a year, maybe a month, maybe a day. I don't know, you know, but the bottom started, and then they brought me in here and they showed me what action was, and they showed me their lives. That was important, because I'm cynical and I don't believe people. You know, if you said you were sober more than 6 months, I think you're lying, or, you know, you weren't an alcoholic, that's for sure, you know, not like me. And but their lives were transparent to me, and so I just started rolling with these people. And David had gotten sober a little bit in front of me, about 2 weeks, and he'd done a fourth and fifth. I don't know if I was honest or not. You have to ask him. But he'd done a fourth and fifth step with our. We had the same sponsor, and so I did mine. And my first like 100 days of sobriety, or 90, or 120 days, or something like that. I dreamed about drinking every night. I'm that type of alcoholic, where it's all I think about. And I did that honest fourth and fifth step, and I didn't hold anything back. I was really thorough at that point. I mean, everything I saw, it was there. I didn't want to say it all, but it was all there. And I just stopped. Like, I went home and waited for the miracle. You know, like, where is it? I want to see it. And a few months later, I just thought, I haven't had a dream about drinking in like 6 months. That's weird. You know, like, the things of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we got into action. I started sponsoring people pretty much right away. First guy I sponsored him for like a month. When I first started sponsoring him, I called him to pick him up on a Wednesday, and he told me that his dad had died in a plane crash that day. And so he didn't go to the meeting that night, which was acceptable. And then the next day, he came to the home group. It was a Thursday night, and he came and he shared about it. And he's still sober today. You know, that's nothing short of a miracle. And I don't know how else to explain that, because the fact is for an alcoholic like me, and I know he's one because he told me his fourth and fifth step. And for an alcoholic like us, just to not drink with good circumstances is a miracle. You know, so in the face of something like that, it's amazing. And I started getting into AA, and we were running around doing all kinds of, you know, fun stuff. We were having a good time. We were acting a little bit crazy. We were sponsoring people. We were taking meetings in places, and, you know, very opinionated in AA, and, you know, that kind of stuff, telling everyone how they should do it and why the meeting's over there are wrong and this one's right and come with us, you know, that kind of stuff. And my sponsor calls it competitive AA. You know, it's like we're doing push-ups in there, like literally like to show off and that kind of stuff. And, you know, not literally, that would have been weird, but but just like that kind of, like, I'm going to show you how my sobriety is better than yours. And that's crazy. You know, like, what does that matter? But little by little, we just started work. And I have a little sister. I have a 12-year-old sister now. When I was a year sober, my parents adopted her from China. She was a year old. She's a little girl now, you know. I see her, and it's like a year ago, she looked like a kid. And now I'm like, she's like going on 30, you know. It's weird, but she's never seen me drink. She doesn't know that me. My parents explained to me if I came around like that again, to not come around, because she's perfect and wonderful and I'm terrible when I'm drinking, which is true. I don't blame them. You know, I would be a terror in everyone's lives. And I met a woman here. My parents, my mom, my stepmom, and her mom had a Bible study, which is weird. Like I said, I'm Jewish, right? So they're having a Bible study at my house, and they say you should meet each other. And we meet, and we start dating, and we've been together for like 8 years. We got married about 3 years ago, and like I said, Terry was an usher, and some of my brother pigeons, and a couple of guys I sponsor were in my wedding. My sponsor was in my wedding. My wife's sponsor was in the wedding. A couple of girls she sponsored were in the wedding. The whole right side of the room was AA. You know, it was like you could tell at the Lord's Prayer, because we ended at a different time. So just like people kept going, you know, and you knew they were the drunks. And then it was having a good time. And I'll be honest, I moved to Orlando about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago. It'll be a year next week, and I got a good job out there. So me and my wife went out there, and I give you a hint: if you ever move in AA, if you're drunk like me, ask some people. You know what I mean? Find out the meetings people talk bad about and go to them, because they're probably awesome. You know, and that's what I did. I found out this meeting. They said they got too many rules. You're like, can't come in late. You know, like, obviously, you know, like, it's AA, and you can't get up and smoke during the whole meeting. It's like, I couldn't do that at my job either. You know, I gotta like sit for more than an hour before I can get up. And so I went there, and it's an amazing meeting. My mom got sick a few weeks ago. My mom came out to see me in November in Orlando, and you could tell she was sick. And my mom was a drunk like us, and she was in a bad spot. And I came back and I said, "You need to go to the hospital, Mom." And she said no and threw me out of her house because she's stubborn. And so I went home and she called me the next day and she said, "All right, you're right. I'm ready to go." And so my mom gets sick. And in this time, I'm in this home group for like 6 or 8 months. And I get an email that we get from time to time in my home group out there. And it's just time slots for an hour. And it says at the top, Ryan Angel's mom is sick. Pray for him and her. Sign up for an hour and devote that hour to them. That's such a selfless act. You know, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I started to cry when I heard it. And they did. Everybody did. I mean, it filled up in about 20 minutes, those 12-hour time slots. And they did it again the next day. And I was in and out in Tampa and Orlando seeing my mom and coming back. And she got real sick a few weeks ago. And I was, you know, so glad to have Terry at this point because I was talking to him. And he just said some stuff to me that put me at ease, you know, and gave me some gratitude. And I showed up, and she's in the hospital, and they told her there's nothing we can do for you. Nothing we can do. You got about a week. And so we took her home in hospice. My mom was a funny lady. She knew every nurse's name by, you know, she just tell me. I talked to Erica today. I'm like, "Who's Erica?" She's like, "My nurse." I'm like, "Well, you got to tell me that. I don't know this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, help me out here." And we took her home. And it's my belief, my mom was a drunk, and she got sober about 9 months ago. But she didn't get sober in AA. But I feel like she's felt the warmth of AA through me and my wife, through you guys, the people she's met, the love that comes out of here. And she, for that last week, man, she was so happy. You know, she laughed and we joked. And my mom passed about 3 weeks ago from alcoholism, from cirrhosis of the liver. It was bad. And the last night she was alive, she slept almost all day. And she woke up and she looked at me and she said, "You want to play some gin?" We played some cards. We played growing up. So I was like, "All right, Mom." I played some gin. She beat me, ate a bunch of cake and stuff, and then passed out and never came back. You know, And I love my mom, you know, and I love my family, and I love all my people here and that kind of stuff. And I couldn't do that without you. You know what I mean? It's nothing I did. You know, just because I sat in a room and held her hand when she passed and did all that stuff, there's nothing in me that does that. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. The bottom is but the beginning. And little by little, that work and those actions that these people just, you know, suggested I do, you know, it's like suggestions, you know, here. It's like, "Hey, you can die or this." You know what I mean? It's like, "All right, yeah, suggestion, great, thanks," you know. And just watching the people that were happy and being with the people that smiled and all did something in common. They were all busy in AA. And it's just the only way I see it here is when they're busy in AA, you can feel it off coming off of them. And so I just surrounded myself with people like that, and I've gotten to do all the stuff I never thought I could do. The stuff that I was completely, to be honest with you, I was completely incapable of doing. I would sit on that 7-Eleven corner for the rest of my life if it was up to me. Even with, you know, better intentions, even with not wanting to, I would still do that because I'm alcoholic. And that doesn't mean that anything, but I'm going to drink again no matter what, unless something changes in my life. And I don't know what that is. You know, you guys have it. I have to be here with you. And some of the sacrifice of that is that I'm in Tampa on a Thursday night, and my wife's a little mad at me because I didn't clean up the old house that we just moved out of quite enough, and she's doing the walkthrough, so it might have been a setup for her on accident. And, you know, I mean, that's part of it. Part of it is I try and live my life thinking a newcomer's always watching. You know, I'm not good at it, and I fail all the time, but it's how I want to be. You know, it's how I try and be. And that's the closest I can get to God. You know, that's the best idea of what I have. I couldn't tell you anything about it, but I know I'm with you. I feel more connected to it. I feel like, you know, it's like you can see it. You know, when somebody like Terry comes in on that first night, and I saw him, and then you see him now, you know, it's undescribable. And because I know, having live with them, having known him for the last 5 years, there's no reason he should be sober either. None. Not a single one. He's got a much worse drinking story than I do even. And there's not anything but coming in here and getting taken up by a group of people. A group of people that are more concerned with them, with you, than them. It's an amazing thing to see. And that's, you know, this place is almost always like home to me, and it is home. It's Tampa. You know, grew up here. It's like here 32 years or something. And but there's nothing like a good home group. And so if this is your home group, singleness of purpose creates unity. It creates a strong, happy home group. In my opinion, there's really nothing else. You know, it's all about How do we carry this message? Just like what Dane was talking about. How do we better carry this message? How can I be more effective with you? That's my life. I worry a lot about my job, especially recently. I think I'm going to get fired pretty much every day I walk in there because I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing and blah, blah, blah. But the fact is my job in Orlando doesn't have to do with my office. My job in Orlando is how can I be more effective in carrying the message out there. It's wherever I end up, that's my job. And so if you're wondering what your job is here, that might just be it. But I'll tell you quickly and then I'm done. The big book talks about, in a vision for you, it talks about the guy leaving the hospital and going to that house for the first time, and he succumbs to the crowd inside and the laughter and the joy, and they laugh at their misfortunes and they cried about joy and all that stuff, and he gets touched inside. And that's absolutely my experience. And a guy in my sponsorship family talks about creating a haven for the suffering and not a showcase for the contented. And I think that's what that paragraph is talking about, is where do? We let people in our homes, we let people into our lives, and we show them how we really live. That's the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. The message is here's this book, let's get to work. You have my time if you want to give it. If you're willing to do it, I'm willing to do it with you. And we can't make anybody. But I'm happy to be here tonight. I did it. I almost cried there in the middle. You might not even notice. But I made it. I'm really, really happy. It's been a tough year. It's been a real tough year. But I couldn't be in a better spot right now. And Terry, thanks so much for having me out here. I love you. You're one of the best people in my life. So thanks for letting me share.